might be dying right now.
35-year-old Air Force veteran and QAnon supporter Ashley Babbitt was shot by a Capitol Police officer.
In her last moments of life, Babbitt was seen trying to force her way through a window that would give her closer access to the House chambers in the United States Capitol. In the wake of the riots, some on social media call her a hero and a martyr.
You deserve answers and you deserve justice. God bless Ashley's incredible memory and God bless America.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Well, that's the opening to a video about the Capitol riot, as they call it. I'd say it's fair to say it's a riot, January the 6th. But right now, we have a lot more information about the shooting of Ashley Babbitt. And that's what I want to talk about with you today. Now, interesting, and even in that opening of that video, they slander her. QAnon supporter, she was a military policewoman for the Air Force, had been for several years. But she's the QAnon supporter. I mean, that's how they say, even reporting her death, her tragic death, that's how they describe her. And then they say she was, you know, breaking through the window. Well, that's not true either. And so I hope that you'll stay tuned today because Joseph Hanneman, who's an investigative reporter for The Blaze, has written about this over 500 articles since January the 6th. He's an encyclopedia of what went on. And so today we're going to talk about what happened to Ashley Babbitt. But first,
I wake up in ICU on a breathing tube. I was on blood transfusion and I wasn't able to talk till like the next day. They told me it was very bad. The abortion pill gave me an infection behind my uterus, so I had to have a partial hysterectomy. I have a nurse come in every day to change the wound vac that I had attached to my stomach. I was falling into like this deep hole of depression, kind of not wanting to do nothing, didn't really want to figure my life out. People that's administrating these type of abortion, they don't want the negative things to be out in the open for people to see, because that's their way of people coming in and them getting money for their practice or for their business. I still think about the child till this day, what life probably could have been if I did keep it.
Sad, so sad, and really less graphic than other stories that I could play for you, and I will. The abortion pill, by the way, according to a new study, is 22 times more dangerous than the FDA ever claimed. Girls can get it. Women can get it without a prescription, without seeing a doctor. They just go online and order it. And the tragedy for those women is just beyond words. And so I'm on a crusade to stop this thing. We have to stop this abortion pill. Stop it. It needs to be off the market. We should not be doing this to our women and children. It reminds me very much of the COVID vaccine. It reminds me of the twist of our medical establishment, our trusted organizations who tell us that something's safe when it is not safe. The French abortion pill RU486 is not safe. Well, Preborn is doing their best. Their whole business has been turned upside down because they're having young women come in carrying babies in a towel, aborted babies, not knowing what to do. Women traumatized, who they do have a pill that they can give to reverse these tragic choices the girls are making, but only if they've only taken the first pill and depending at what stage. So it's a tragedy, no matter how you strike it or no matter how you tell it, it's a tragedy. If you'd like to help Preborn in a practical way stop this, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. The other thing, of course, is to call your congressman, call your senators, call your representatives, and tell them they need to step in. They say they're pro-life. Well, put their money where their mouth is. But you can go to preborn.com/Sandy, make your most generous donation, and meanwhile, the work of Preborn goes into trying to persuade the women not to try to take the life of their baby in the first place. But when they find themselves in this situation, they do what they do in the case of these ultrasounds. They tell them about Jesus because some of them are just shattered. The work is worthy, and I suggest and ask that you go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your best donation. Okay, so today it's very interesting, fascinating, complicated. But it is really the story of Ashley Babbitt and how this shooting came to take place on January the 6th. And our guest is investigative journalist Joseph Hanneman. Stay tuned for today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
He says officers barricaded the door, what he considered the last line of defense.
I had been yelling and screaming as loud as I was, please stop, get back, stop. We had our weapons drawn.
There's a gun! There's a gun!
Byrd, only his hand and gun visible, targeted a figure trying to climb through a window. He fired a single, fatal shot, hitting Ashley Babbitt. She was 35 years old, an Air Force veteran, Trump supporter, and QAnon follower.
We see your arm out there for a considerable amount of time. Were you wavering?
I was taking a tactical stance. You're ultimately hoping that your commands will be complied with, and unfortunately, they were not.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Well, that was a little skim of the story here. You've been hearing me talk about Ashley Babbitt and January 6th, since January the 6th. Now, we have learned so much. We're going to focus on Ashley today because she was the one who was shot. She's the only person who was shot, the only gun that was fired. It was a Capitol policeman killing her through a window leading to the Speaker's lobby. But what's the story there? Why was Ashley going through that window, and why did he shoot her? I mean, didn't she deserve it? She was a rioter, right? She was going to go into, I don't know, try to stop the, change the election. That's what the word is. But what is the truth here? And I would say, just I'll give you kind of the grand opening paragraph, is that in principle, an agreement has just been reached for $30 million for a wrongful death suit. So we're going to talk about that too. But first, I want to introduce our guest, because no one really probably knows more about this story than Joseph Hanneman. Joseph was a reporter we've talked before when he was with the Epoch Times, and now he is an investigative reporter for The Blaze, still covering this in great detail, all of J6, not just Ashley's story. And he is from Wisconsin, which is, you know, good people come from Wisconsin, I can tell you. Maybe not Supreme Court justices, but the rest of them are pretty fine people. He worked for Catholic World Report, Chicago Tribune, the Racine Journal Times. He's a Wisconsinite. So, salt of the earth, Joseph Hanneman. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Joe, when did you first write your article about January 6th? Do you remember?
Well, when I came to Epoch Times, they pretty much immediately tasked me with covering the anniversary, the first anniversary of January 6th. So although I had written a few stories in December of 2021, that anniversary story, which appeared on the first anniversary, was really my first deep dive into it. And through that, I learned just how complicated January 6th was going to be to cover.
Yeah. Can you estimate how many articles you think you've written on J6?
Oh, probably 500 between the two news operations. Most of what I wrote at Epoch Times was January 6th related, and maybe not quite as high a percentage at The Blaze, but still it's the lion's share of my effort. So it is, and even with all those news clippings and articles, we're still just scratching the surface.
And two documentaries, two or more? You worked with
three. One was a kind of a shorter one. It was about 70 minutes, but two full-length documentaries.
Yeah. When you started this, were you a skeptic?
I didn't know what to think. I mean, I had, like most Americans, I was watching this on the internet when it happened, and so And of course the mainstream media, the way it promoted it breathlessly and like this was some sort of an ongoing invasion. So I really didn't have a good grounding in it until I got thrown into it and started asking the questions that nobody in the corporate media seemed to be asking.
Yeah, that's for sure. And so that's why we're here, because they didn't they distorted video. They immediately, isn't it interesting, Joe, that they immediately on January the 6th, I remember this so distinctly, started calling people there insurrectionists. That's the word they use. All the networks, all the coverage, insurrection. But what, you know how they do that? They pick a talking point and they seem to all get the memo. And so I thought that was my first heads up that this is just something's not right here. But in covering Ashley, because I believe this is one of the more complicated stories out of this bit. First of all, if you don't mind telling the story, and I'll try to help you because I've got some clips here that will help us just a little bit. But just tell us who she was, if you can, and then I'm gonna play a clip of her when she entered the speakers, the hallway outside the speakers lobby. So tell us who
sure.
she was.
Yeah, Ashley Babbitt was 35 years old. She was an Air Force and Air National Guard veteran, and she ran a pool cleaning company in San Diego with her husband, Aaron. And so she had followed President Trump's campaign very closely, although despite what the other media portray her as some sort of QAnon MAGA nut, she had voted for Barack Obama, so this was not somebody who was steeped in politics, but got very interested in it when President Trump was running. So she came to Washington by herself. Her husband stayed behind to run their company. So she came in on January 5th, went to the speech at the Ellipse where President Trump spoke about what he believed was a fraudulent election. And then she, along with tens of thousands of others, walked from the Washington Mall over to the Capitol. And she went up to the upper terrace, followed a lot of thousands of people that went into the Capitol. And she ended up in the hallway outside the speaker's lobby.
Yeah. Let me stop you right there just for a second. You know, there's a video of her walking with the crowd. It's just so sweet. She's just beaming. She's happy. She's a beautiful day, and she's kind of got swag, and I can't wait to go. You know, she's just all smiles, not exactly storming the Capitol, but I remember that video. And then Taylor Hansen, who I'm sure you've worked with or talked with, he's from my perspective, what I've heard, he's like a videographer, a reporter, investigative reporter, I think was covering other riots, and he was walking with her into that the hallway outside the speaker's lobby where everybody's seen the photo of the windows being knocked out and Ashley allegedly climbing to get through into the speaker's chamber. But Taylor has a different story to tell. And the interesting thing is this video that we're going to play here, I know it's just sound, but I'm trying to set it up. They're walking in together. She's walking ahead of him. They're chatting. And you'll hear kind of what transpired because nobody was in that hallway outside of the speaker's chamber at that time. This is Taylor Hansen's voice you'll hear, and this is a report done by a San Diego, I think it was Good Morning San Diego. This is clip 2.
How are you doing, man?
Good.
Stay safe, all right? Man, you are covered. I thought I was bad. You got it way worse. Hey, do you need water or something?
Okay, so that's
all right,
how
that journalist Hansen joins us.
Okay, sorry, I interrupted. But Joseph, what is happening there, and what happens next? Because you know this all by heart.
Yeah, Taylor Hansen and Ashley Babbitt just by chance ended up walking together from the main house door where the crowd had initially gathered. And some people were trying to open the main house door, but they walked towards the speaker's lobby, and they were the first two to arrive there just seconds after the three Capitol police officers had taken up their station at the entrance. You can hear on that clip you played, they walked past a member of the House Sergeant-at-Arms, a plainclothes officer who was on his phone walking straight, and they, you know, Taylor said to him, stay safe or be safe, and then the two of them walked into the hallway and just seemed to be engaging in some light banter with these three Capitol Police officers. So there was no... the officers did not try to drive them out. I mean, you'll read these narratives in some of the Department of Justice's documents on that day, which simply are not true. It was very informal. You know, they were just chatting, and it was short time later when a larger crowd followed them in there when things started to get complicated and you know, within minutes went very, very wrong.
Yeah, so this is the part, I know, I guess we're telling it in a truncated version, but those three Capitol policemen standing in front of that door were wearing masks, and they're going to be a big part of the story that we're going to tell in a second. For my part, I noticed that they were very unfriendly. I mean, Ashley and the filmmaker were just trying to banter with them. I didn't see them being very friendly back. And that made me wonder, because then they just all of a sudden disappear, don't they? They just leave the door. What do we know about that?
Well, eventually they did, but not before that hallway had turned into a riot scene. There was one man in particular who caused most of the trouble in that hallway. His name is Zachary Alam. I'm not sure exactly how he pronounces it. But he took a riot helmet, and he used it as a cudgel and started smashing at the glass. In fact, he had almost, even before he used the helmet to break out these windows, he used his fist and he punched right next to the middle officer of these, which, you know, was as close to an assault. I'm surprised the officer didn't flinch on that. But he was extremely violent. He did most of the damage, and Ashley actually tried to confront him. She put her hand on his arm to try to get his attention, and he just kind of just turned and kind of pushed her away. So she wasn't able to get his attention at that point. But, you know, he was the primary reason that there was a riot there, and she was getting increasingly concerned. She yelled at the officers to call bleeping help. She knew that this was going to get out of control because she had worked, guarding prisoners in Afghanistan and Iraq. So she understood, crowds could be dangerous. And she practically begged them to call for backup. And eventually she stopped the riot. Most people will not acknowledge this, but she put an end to the riot because she grabbed Zachary by the backpack. She spun him around and she punched him in the nose fairly hard. His glasses were knocked off. He was clearly annoyed. And within seconds, she had hopped up in that window and was shot to death.
Let's stop. Let's pause there just for a second.
That.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
Joe, just hang on a second. Let's hold that thought because Taylor Hansen has video of that moment. And I just kind of want us to just, this is what's happening. He's just described it to you. Joseph has, Ashley gets into a confrontation with Zachary Jordan Alam. And Taylor, this is the sound of it. And this is Taylor Hansen then afterwards saying what he saw. He was standing right there. Clip 3.
Yeah, let's take a look at that a second video right now so we can discuss that as well. Can we roll that, please? All right, so explain to me what we saw there when Ashley is grabbing that man's backpack.
Yeah, so Ashley was actively trying to disarm these people, trying to calm them down throughout this entire kind of confrontation with these police officers. She continuously got in between the officers and Zachary Alam, who is that agitator you see that she grabs the backpack of. And in this video, as it gets a little bit deeper into it, she actually reaches in with her right hand, pulls Zachary back from the window as he shatters the last window pane and punches him with her left hand. She was left-handed in a southpaw and hits him right in the face and causes his glasses to fall. And seven seconds later, that's actually when Michael Leroy Byrd ended up issuing a kill shot with no verbal warning.
Okay, Joe, now please add your own commentary there after watching all of this.
if Ashley had not done what she did, the punch and then turning and hopping up in the window, Zachary would have climbed up there and most likely been shot and possibly killed. And I understand that is something that he acknowledged in correspondence to the Babbitt family that really did save his life. But that was the end of the riot, because as soon as the shot went off and Ashley fell to the ground and started bleeding, then it was just pandemonium. It wasn't a riot, but people were, standing around her and then got very upset with the police, saying, you shot her, you shot her, you killed her. So it went from riot to post-riot pandemonium very quickly.
So I remember that moment, too, because I was watching television. It was just horrific. And Ashley's just a little bit of nothing. She's a small girl, but a powerhouse. We can see that she had a lot of fire, and that's probably why she was doing it. I've talked to her mom. Mickey talked about her daughter. I don't think they – well, that's an aside. Her daughter, she would say, was very, very spunky, and we see that. Have we ever figured out why she climbed up? Because it makes no sense that she would punch him and then try to go through that window. It just doesn't make sense to me. Joseph, do you have any theories on that?
Well, the best explanation I've heard came from her husband, Aaron, who about the time that I discovered this clip of her punching Zachary, he said the best he could figure is that she just wanted to escape. She saw what chaos and things were getting worse. This crowd is fairly packed in. There was a SWAT team coming up the stairs, and the noise was just unbelievably loud. And this is someone who is claustrophobic. Aaron said even at concerts she would get uneasy, and occasionally they would leave because the crowds were too thick or too dense. So, his guess was that she was trying to escape. She certainly was not trying to advance on the congresspeople, which that has been the accusation, was made as recently as a week ago by the Capitol Police Chief. That simply isn't true. I think this was just a desperation move on her part.
Well, if you look at the full body of evidence that you can see, that makes no sense, that she would just kind of change her mind and then start charging the speaker's lobby, So that explanation makes, that's the first time I've heard that, and that does make sense to me. But Zachary Jordan Alam, who is that? Who was he? That sounds like Antifa. To me, I mean, that's what they did. They broke out windows. We watched them all through the summer and the year preceding that, doing exactly that, breaking out windows very strategically. So what do we know about him?
He is an interesting study. I tracked him from the time he entered the Capitol. Actually, we watched him on security video helping people climb up the northwest steps so they could go into the Capitol. But once he got into the Capitol, he took a very interesting route. He came into the crypt, and then he took what looked like a very hard-to-find elevator up to the fourth floor of the Capitol. Now, why would somebody do that? He went up to the fourth floor, came out of the elevator, and then immediately went into the stairwell. And he went down at least two levels, and then he came out, and he ended up walking all the way around to where the police had set up a line against a very loud, raucous crowd. This was at the main house door. And he appeared out of nowhere from behind the police lines, which is very odd. And he was actually being escorted by the same house sergeant-at-arms person that Taylor had walked past. So people immediately had suspicions. I mean, I had a clip of Zachary with Taylor, put his arm around him and started talking about world revolution. I mean, those are not the statements of a Trump supporter. Zachary came from a very troubled background. There are lots of family issues. He had tried to go to medical school. But that didn't work out so well, and I guess there was a suicide attempt when he was in medical school, and he went back and lived with his mother for a time. But just before January, or after January 6th, he was he basically did a fairly large scale burglary in Pennsylvania, and he was eventually caught with all sorts of stolen loot in his hotel. And his mother, in the end, advised the FBI where they could find him, and they picked him up. But his role, I would say, is still, we still don't know for certain, other than he caused a lot of chaos. But he was all over the Capitol grounds, and, you know, whether this is someone who was sent there or had any kind of an agenda, some of the folks that were in the D.C. jail with him say that he told them that he was Antifa. Whether that's true or he was just trying to impress them, you know, I have no idea. But he wasn't just your average run-of-the-mill protester, because as soon as he hit that hallway, his job, it certainly appeared, was to cause chaos.
Boy, that's really an untold story. I remember thinking, Antifa and Black Lives Matter, but mostly Antifa, they were the garden variety anarchists who were just creating so much havoc in this country and very dangerous. And they were everywhere. I remember being in D.C. in, I believe, September before the election, and we saw them there on a hill, like a gathering, and we were sort of concerned, you know, about what they might do. But I think there were so many million people there for that event that they didn't do anything. But then this was the one event they didn't show up to, supposedly. They did, some supposedly didn't show up for January 6th. They were mysteriously missing. Did you ever write about that or pontificate about that, Joseph?
Yes, they did march in procession with the crowd that came from the Ellipse over to the Capitol. There was a group of about 50. They were carrying an Antifa flag. But, you know, there was not large-scale trouble with Antifa or people that were, you know, visibly allied to that group. You know, we saw a group changing clothes that theorized that they were Antifa. You know, we've got Zachary, who apparently told his cellmates in the D.C. jail that he was Antifa. But there is no indication of large-scale involvement in the January 6th story. So it's not a big part of it. But in the case of Zachary, he was an agent of chaos for hours that day.
With some help, it sounds like. And how about that one? How about that one situation where a guy was breaking out a window outside the Capitol, but up on close to the door, and someone tried to stop him. And then he accused this other young man who was just a garden variety Trump supporter of breaking out the windows. Remember that scene? Do we know who that person was that was breaking out the window at that? I know there were other situations, so maybe I'm not being clear enough, but does that ring a bell to you? Do we know who that was?
Yeah, that was on the east patio on the other side of the Capitol. And the journalist who shot that video, Bobby Powell, and I nicknamed this fellow Capitol Glass Man because he did. He pulled out the tempered glass from one of the windows, and then he saw that Mr. Powell was filming him. And so he dropped the glass, and it just crumpled into a pile. And then to try to distract everyone, he went and grabbed onto this protester and started shoving him and yelling at him for, "You can't go into the Capitol." But Bobby's video makes it very clear what happened. And this fellow was dressed like what you would expect a Fed to be dressed like. And, you know, we were not able to find any evidence that he was ever sought for anything. He has not been identified, to my knowledge. The sedition hunters, they mocked us when we were trying to find out who he was, but they did eventually put up a page dedicated to him and showed, you know, that he was in many other places on the grounds that day. But that, you know, that window was no doubt expensive, and I'm sure that was felony-level vandalism. So, you know, and Bobby Powell tried his best to get media attention for this, get FBI to look at his video. And, you know, he just didn't have any success. And we at Epoch, we covered his story very extensively, but he was largely ignored by politicians, the law enforcement, and the press. And the poor fellow's had 8 heart attacks, and I think 4 of them were probably January 6th related, as he tried to get President Trump's attention to show this video. But we don't know who Capitol Glass Man is. He's one of our suspicious actors that we hope to figure out now that the FBI is ostensibly in friendly hands.
You said this in passing, but I want to explain. Sedition hunters were recruited by the FBI. They're just citizens who volunteered, as I understand it, Joseph, to just comb the internet, comb the Facebook pages, do all the research for the FBI, turn people in left and right. And that's what a lot of these horrible arrests and people's lives are made miserable by neighbors and friends trying to figure, you know, turn their neighbors and friends in because they thought they were insurrectionists. Were they paid for that?
Some of them have told us that they did receive money from the United States government. These were people overseas. And the theory was sedition hunters. There's a lot of people who believe that they were not just funded by the FBI, but operational control was probably with the FBI because of the capabilities that they had to do facial recognition and search video that wasn't in the public domain, which most of it wasn't until fairly late in the January 6th story. So sedition hunters just, you know, with a vengeance went after people, and they doxed other people. I've interviewed families who had their home address published by sedition hunters, and then they get drive-bys and people throwing bricks and things like that. So it was very much a vindictive thing, but and this is another thing we want to get confirmation of from the FBI, but there's every indication that they and other hunters groups were indeed funded by the U.S. government.
Just to be clear, so I don't misstate this in the future, so the sedition hunters, were they all overseas, or were they a mixture of people?
A mixture, yeah.
Okay, all right, okay. Yeah,
there were plenty of them that were in the United States, yes.
Okay, so there's another character we've not introduced yet, and I think it'd really be nice to let Lester Holt introduce him. This is clip 6.
Your name has been battered about on the internet, but you've never been officially publicly identified. Do you want to tell us who you are?
My name is Michael Byrd. I'm a lieutenant for the United States Capitol Police.
For months, he has lived in hiding, he says, over this moment. His decision to use deadly force against a rioter as she climbed through a barricaded door that leads to the House chamber. In the months since, he's been the target of threats.
Can you give us the nature of some of those threats?
They talked about, you know, killing me, cutting off my head, very vicious and cruel things.
Racist things?
There were some racist attacks as well. It's all disheartening because I know I was doing my job.
All right. Well, we stopped our discussion with Joseph right there because the whole story about Lieutenant Michael Byrd, who actually shot Ashley, is fascinating and detailed. And now there's more information about him. So we're going to save that for our second day discussion. So just I hope that you'll tune in. But I know this is fascinating stuff, really. It's true. It's better than any of those made-up dramas on television. This is real-life tragedy, and we'll continue with that in part 2 with Joseph Hanneman. But don't go away. There's a little bit more for today right after this. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
I was 25 years old, and I had known about my pregnancy for over a month. My cramps didn't start until I took the second set of pills. It was my first time being pregnant, but I knew I was having contractions. I lay down in bed as soon as I felt the first one coming on. I was wearing nothing but a big t-shirt and a diaper pad. Intense pain, then it would go away, then more pain. Each wave of cramping a little worse than the one before. I hurt so bad I had to hold myself all balled up, and I just yelled at my boyfriend, "Turn on the bath, I need to get in there." I felt a flood of liquid in my underwear, and I stepped in the bath with my clothes still on. Lying back in the tub, I felt some pressure release. Then I screamed. The fetus was floating in the water. It was slightly smaller than the palm of my hand. And the fetus had a head, hands and legs, defined fingers and toes. I leapt from the bath and collapsed in my boyfriend's arms. I learned later that my fetus matched descriptions of those roughly 13 weeks along.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. And would you like to stop that? That's the French abortion pill, and that's what women are going through. It could be your daughter, could be your granddaughter. This is what's happening. They are giving them the pill through the mail without seeing a doctor. They have no idea how far along they are. Women are going through such trauma. Such trauma. They're being lied to, used for money. The abortion industry, once again, is prevailing to use these women just to as a piggy bank. The abuse of women is just beyond comprehension. And so if you would like to stop it, Preborn is on the front line of trying to do that, trying to stop this pill from being available, trying to stop after the woman's taking the first pill, try to give them progesterone so that the baby can live, trying to stop them before they take that second pill, which actually expels it, and it's too late. So if you'd like to help, will you help? Preborn, you just contact them at preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Capitol Police in their press release after exonerating you said your actions potentially saved members and staff from serious injury and possible death. What was it like to hear those words, to see those words?
Those words meant a lot because that's exactly what I did on that day. That was my mission. That was what I prepared for. And it's rewarding and refreshing to hear that.
All right, that's the voice of Lieutenant Michael Byrd, who was the shooter for Ashley Babbitt. Is he a hero or is he a villain? We'll talk about that on Part 2 with Joseph Hanneman. I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan. You can put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Tim Plan. Well, thank you for listening to this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.